This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. Going to give you my NFL picks in just a second. Also, have a guest coming up to talk about the NFL, the week that is. Jordan Dejani coming up, NFL writer for CBS Sports. But first, I'll finish the conversation on the dehumanization of the athlete in modern society. Sounds like a thesis paper. On CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news, there's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's go to Dave in Virginia. Dave, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Dave?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
So I guess it was just more of a different perspective, which is what I've seen over the last, you know, call it decade, 15 years, advent of social media, put in all the ingredients you want. But effectively, sports to a great degree has now become the third verboten topic at whether it's the office or your local watering hole, which is you don't talk about politics, you don't talk about religion, because I think that people are now identifying at an emotional level. They're no longer necessarily identifying at an intellectual level. And, you know, your example earlier of, oh, that was a bad play. You know, how dare you say that? People freak out, fist fight, et cetera, et cetera. Because they're identifying emotionally with it, right? Mm-hmm. They might have a crummy life, whatever it is, or whatever, but they're effectively identifying with "quote unquote" their team. And how dare you, you know, that'd be like picking on their religion or their politics. And look where both of those are today. So I guess that was just sort of more or less the area that I wanted to go to, which is, you know, I don't think it's necessarily jealousy in this case. I think it's somebody saying, you know, I'm a Steelers fan or I'm a Patriots fan, and they're willing to go to the mattresses over that level of attachment they have to the team.
Yeah, like I think that's part of it. And as I said before, to me, it seems like sports are an acceptable outlet for some of the anger that people might be harboring, which really shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't direct that anger at anyone, and that's a you problem, not an anyone else problem. As far as the teams they root for, you know, what they mean to someone, I would never say don't root for your team or don't have an attachment or anything like that. But in the grand scheme of things, in reality, it simply is an entertainment product. There is nothing more than that. That's just the truth. There's nothing more than that. It is an entertainment product. All right, time to get to my NFL picks for this week. What was I last week, Anthony?
3-3 last week.
3-3. I think I've been, was I 500 the last 2 weeks? Something like that. Right in that range. I'm going to have to pick a lot of games this week if I'm ever going to get out of the hole I started the season in. I started the season way behind. I think it was like 1-4 the first 2 weeks of the season, and I've been trying to recover from that point. Have been not bad since then. About 500 probably since then, but when you start 8 games under 500 and then you're 500, you wind up 8 games under 500. All right, time to make my picks for this week. I'm going to start with the Bucks -2.5 over the Jags. I went with the Bucks last week as well. I'm going to stick with them because here's the thing with Tampa. Jameis Winston obviously is a roller coaster, right? He'll have a bunch of turnovers and then a big play, a turnover and then a big play. But if you look at the Bucks season, they've played a lot of games where they just lost them in the fourth quarter, right? They lost games to the Giants in the fourth quarter. They lost a game to the Saints in the fourth quarter. Lost a game to the Seahawks in overtime. Lost a game in Tennessee in the fourth quarter. And I just felt last week that trend was going to reverse itself a little bit against a bad Atlanta team. They've got another bad team in Jacksonville who is just really struggling right now. So I think Tampa was already playing a little bit better than their record said that they were, and I would expect their record to even out a little bit. So give me Tampa winning outright over Jacksonville by a field goal or more. I'll take the Jets -3 over the Bengals. This, of course, will be when it burns me because, I was trying not to buy into this Jets turnaround at this point in the season. And when I say turnaround, they still are just 4-7. But they're on a 3-game winning streak. And they looked clearly superior to Washington, a bad team, and clearly superior to Oakland, a decent team, with a win over the Giants mixed in there after they had that really rough stretch and that loss to Miami. Maybe that loss to Miami woke them up a bit. And while their schedule's been the way it is, I do believe in their defense's ability. And Sam Darnold's played a little bit better as of late. So it's tough to pick the Bengals in anything right now. Every time I've even thought about going with the Bengals, it hasn't paid off. And at 0-11, the Jets -3 seems almost too good to be true the way the two teams are playing respectively. Maybe the Bengals with Andy Dalton play a little bit better, but I still will take the Jets. I'll go with the Steelers +2 over the Browns. Going to be a lot of emotions in that game. Speaking of emotions before, clearly off the heels of that Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph incident. But basically, I just like the Steelers at home. The way that team has played this year, they've gutted out a lot of wins. Obviously not the most talented version of their team. Mike Tomlin has done a great job this season to have the Steelers above 500. I quote all the time that he's never had a losing season in all those years with Pittsburgh, and it feels like he's not going to have one this year, and this would be the one that there'd be a lot of excuses for having a losing season. I think the quarterback switch they made was the correct one. Mason Rudolph just doesn't look like a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. I'm not saying that Hodges is, but he's been more effective for them, has made more plays down the field for them. That could open up the offense a little bit. Steelers +2 at home. It's just tough for me to pick against them getting points in Pittsburgh. I'll take the Panthers -10 over Washington. Panthers still playing for something, obviously, at this point in the season. Washington is a mess of a franchise, a mess of a team right now. I think after that one rough week where people sort of thought the bloom was off the rose with Kyle Allen, he's been solid. I don't think anybody's going to think of him as the next MVP of the league, but he's proven his merit at least of being a capable guide for an NFL team. And the Panthers, in a rough stretch, they really had a tough loss against New Orleans. That loss in New Orleans, that was a really good game, 34-31. I think they'll snap their 3-game losing streak. They're primed to do that, hosting Washington. And I think they do it going away with a big game from Christian McCaffrey. I'll take the Cardinals +3 over the Rams. The Cardinals quietly have sort of been finding their groove offensively. The Kingsbury and Kyler Murray dynamic has started to shape up nicely. They aren't getting many wins to show for it, but they played San Francisco tough in San Francisco. They played San Francisco tough at home. I mean, they lost those two games to San Francisco by a combined 7 points, and they lost in Tampa by a field goal, but they've been putting points on the board. Murray's been playing well, and they beat the bad teams when they've played them recently. They beat Cincinnati and Atlanta and New York in a 3-game stretch where they won. The Rams offense is just so anemic right now that it's hard to have any faith in what they're doing. I mean, obviously only putting up 6 on the board against the Ravens, and then even the 2 weeks prior, they put 17 up in a win on the Bears, and then 12 up against the Steelers. I just don't know if they're scoring enough points. So I'll take the Cardinals +3 over the Rams. Give me the Chiefs -9.5 over the Raiders. It's time for the Chiefs, if they're going to do it, to turn on the afterburners. Now's the time. They're going to get some separation, prime themselves for what we thought we'd see with them in the playoffs. Now's the time to do it. Oakland's been a nice story this year, but they're not really very good. Despite it 6-5, they're -56 on the season. They've been outscored on the year. They're only a game back of Kansas City in the division. So this would be a chance for Kansas City to separate themselves once and for all in that division. Patrick Mahomes has had a few weeks to get his legs under him, fresh off a bye. Give me the Kansas City Chiefs going away against the Raiders. I think this is a blowout. And then finally, I will take the Vikings plus 2.5 over the Seahawks. Again, the bye plays into that. Minnesota quietly's had a very good year. They're 8-3. I have immense respect for Seattle, immense respect for Russell Wilson. This is no judgment thing on them. And Seattle still has stuff to play for. They could still catch San Francisco in the division. But the Seahawks are in a solid position for the postseason regardless. And this just feels like one that I think the Vikings can either steal away or keep very, very close. So I'll take the Vikings plus 2.5 over the Seahawks. To recap, that's Bucks minus 2.5 over the Jags, Jets minus 3 over the Bengals, Steelers plus 2 over the Browns, Panthers minus 10 over Washington, Cardinals plus 3 over the Rams, Chiefs minus 9.5 over the Raiders, and the Vikings plus 2.5 over the Seahawks. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227 to get more in-depth into some of the storylines around the NFL. Jordan Dejani, NFL writer for CBS Sports, will join me coming up next. We'll go over the biggest games and the most important storylines that's coming up here on The Robin Lundberg Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
How does one get a professor in pop culture degree? That's what I need to know. Is that something you can actually be a professor in? Is there someone who can, you know? There is a Jay-Z course that's taught at Washington, D.C. and Georgetown, I think. Michael Eric Dyson's been hawking the book. He wrote the book, and he teaches the course on it as well. So there are those aspects. But I don't know if you can actually get a pop culture degree, or else you'd see a lot of people enrolling. That'd be a good major for athletes, too, right? If you were an athlete. What do you major in? Pop culture? Might as well. This family has many different famous people in it who have become famous because of being in this family and reality show, and there are NBA players involved. What family are we talking about? Oh, the Kardashians. You got it. Here's your diploma. All right. Time to get to this week in the NFL. And to do so, I'm joined by Jordan Dejani, NFL writer for CBS Sports. And Jordan, looking at this week, there are some games that really stand out on the schedule. Number one, I think, at first glance, is the 49ers and the Ravens. That feels like a possible Super Bowl preview. Right now, Baltimore is playing so well, it's hard for me to pick anyone against them, but I'm enthralled by the idea of Lamar Jackson going up against that 49ers defense. Will this be the moment that completely solidifies what we've seen facing a defense like that?
Yeah, you know, I think that there is a great chance of happening. Like you said, this is a great chance of being a Super Bowl preview. And Lamar Jackson against the 49ers defense, but not just the 49ers defense, the 49ers defensive line. A lot of first-round picks invested into that group. They've been playing absolutely outstanding over the past few weeks. Can Lamar Jackson break to the second level as easy as he has? Because these guys on the defensive line, these four guys, they are so fast. They are great at getting out into the flats. They aren't just guys that are plugging the A-gaps. These are a bunch of athletes. So if you ask me, you know, we've been lauding this Ravens offense for the past week, saying that they're going to change the game. Lamar Jackson is going to be an incredible player down the road in his career. The 49ers have a great chance of beating the Ravens in my mind. So I think the Ravens are a 5-point favorite. So I'll probably take the 49ers in that game because I still think the Ravens are incredible. I think Lamar Jackson is definitely the MVP frontrunner, and he should win it. But I'm not ready to crown them the Super Bowl champions yet.
Yeah, how about this one, the Browns and the Steelers? Obviously, because of what happened with Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph, there's a little bit of an extra buzz, I guess, if you will, or emotions around this game. Rudolph not quarterbacking for the Steelers, of course, which I think is a good move for them. But this feels like a super important game for both teams. One, it would end the Browns' season, essentially, I think, to lose after they've bounced back a little bit to get within one game of 500. And for the Steelers, it would put them on a path that I don't think most people would have expected at the beginning of the season, or especially early in the season after Roethlisberger went down, where I think you got to give Mike Tomlin a lot of credit for where they're positioned right now.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Not enough people are talking about this game, and it means so much in the grand scheme of things. like you said, it'd be a lot more entertaining if Mason Rudolph was playing. But I think Hodges is a better quarterback at this point. But right, I think right now, if the season ended, the Steelers have that wild card spot in the AFC. So that's interesting to see if they can hold on to that with the teams like the Colts and Titans right behind. The Cleveland Browns, their schedule is absolute cake down the backstretch. But can they beat a team like the Steelers who have a better quarterback than Mason Rudolph at the helm this week? So obviously they're playing for their season, just like you said. So I think it's going to be a very, very interesting game. I wrote a weekly article for CBSSports.com picking every game, and believe it or not, I actually took the Steelers in this one. Mm-hmm. I'm calling that Hodges has a pretty big game. I think that he's kind of underrated. I've liked what I've seen out of him, and just in kind of limited time. And I'm obviously not sold on the Cleveland Browns at this point. I think they have a lot to prove. And their wins over teams with losing records doesn't really speak to me.
Yeah, I'm with you, actually. I just took the Steelers. Them getting points at home doesn't seem to jive with where Cleveland is right now. Robin Lundberg talking to Jordan Dejani, NFL writer for CBS Sports here on CBS Sports Radio. Another one that I think is important is the Raiders and Chiefs. Obviously not just for the division, because the crazy enough, the Raiders are just a game behind the Chiefs. But I think this needs to kind of be the statement game for Kansas City. You know, they've had some time to recover. Patrick Mahomes has had some time to get back out there and get reacclimated. And if they're going to be the team that we sort of expected them to be at the beginning of the season and early in the season, I think they need to win this one going away.
Yeah, I that's exactly, you said it all right there. I think that the Chiefs have a great chance to rebound here against the Raiders, and I was kind of surprised that Vegas agreed with me. I was very surprised then to see the Chiefs be double-digit favorites at home, right? But they're playing in Kansas City, which I think is the absolute X factor for this matchup, because we've seen over the past month how good the Raiders have been at home, right? That team is playing for their fans before they leave for Vegas, which is why I called the Jets upset last week over the Raiders, because they had to travel back to the East Coast for the first time in over a month. So I think that the Raiders are a really good team, but like you said, the Chiefs are the team that are the Super Bowl contenders, right? Patrick Mahomes, the reigning MVP, he has looked better over the past couple of weeks, but the team hasn't, which I really find interesting. And I think this is a great opportunity for them to rebound and kind of show that they should be considered one of the best teams in the AFC. And I think that's exactly what happens on Sunday afternoon.
What about the Rams and the Cardinals? I've kind of liked the groove that Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury seem to have found offensively, where they're playing well. They haven't exactly gotten the wins. I don't think anybody expected them to, but the Rams are in a totally different position with a lot of expectations. But their offense has just been anemic, and Jared Goff has been bad. The Rams on the road against the Cardinals, do you see the potential for a disastrous kind of L there?
Well, you know, it's funny, because while this week was all about the rise of the Ravens, there was also considerable attention given to the Rams, right? They're the dynasty that never happened, a prospective offensive genius who was undercut by inconsistent quarterback play and a star running back with arthritis in his knee, the one-year wonder, Sean McVay. But what if the Rams just come out and dominate the Cardinals? What if Jared Goff just has his best performance of the season? I mean, what if they just completely dominate Kyler Murray and the Cardinals? I know they're a fun team to watch. Kyler Murray has played some really, really good ball as of late. I don't think people are actually watching him. But I saw that he was listed on the injury report yesterday. He's questionable for Sunday.
Yeah, hamstring issue he has, I think. Yeah.
Right, right. And while most reports coming out of Arizona are that that he's going to play and everything's fine, I still take that as a sign from God that I was right in my weekly picks article and that the Rams have a rebound win over the Cardinals. It's not going to save their season by any means. It's not going to be incredible. But the attention we gave to the Rams this week about how Sean McVay's done, right, and how anemic their offense is, and the Rams just need to rebuild, right? I don't see it that way. I think that the Rams have a rebound win over the Cardinals, and they win in convincing fashion.
In convincing fashion, that would be a big. I mean, that's a team that needs a win right now. And one more on the games that already happened, just to recap, because there's been so much time spent on Jason Garrett's job status, and I don't really want to talk about that because, I mean, I've talked about it plenty. But the Cowboys losing to the Bills, is that something you think said more about where Dallas is at or quietly said more about where Buffalo is at?
Yeah, honestly, I want to answer both. I know that's a lame answer, but at the same time, it's just kind of what I expected. The Cowboys to come out flat, and then the Bills, I mean, what, this was Josh Allen's first ever national televised game that he played in, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Bills, you know, are quietly a good team. Their defense is good when it comes to shutting down playmakers usually. Josh Allen is at least a decent quarterback. He's not, you know, fans are calling for him to go to the bench. Like, he's had a pretty decent year. Frank Gore, obviously, he keeps on churning. So the Bills have quietly been a really good team. I'm convinced that the score was what it was. I knew that the Bills were going to cover the spread at least. But I think it says a little bit about both. But to, obviously, the Cowboys fans and the Cowboys Nation, this is an absolute disaster. The Buffalo Bills, a team that they definitely haven't watched all year, comes into Dallas, comes into Jerry World on Thanksgiving and takes down America's team. Obviously, that something needs to change there in Dallas. But in terms of, like, the Bills being a Super Bowl contender, I'm not saying that at all. But they obviously are going to make the playoffs, and they're going to be a fun team to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed with them of late. Jordan, appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
Thanksgiving disguised as a feast. Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's go to Mitch in Jersey. Mitch, you're up next here on the show. What's going on, Mitch?
Hello, Robin. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Same to you.
Great. Another disappointing team you got to mention besides the Dodgers and the Rams, the Chargers. I mean, I really think they should give Rod Taylor a shot. See, maybe he's got a little Murray in him. I mean, not as good, but he's pretty good when he had his chance. Because I think Rivers is kind of going like Eli. I mean, let's see what you got your backup has. And if not, then be a little aggressive and trade up for Justin Herbert next year. And maybe they should think about Mike McCarthy, get him as a coach, moving to a new stadium. They only have like 10 fans. Build up the fan base that way.
Well, yeah, the fan thing is difficult. And I don't think a coach or anything is going to fix that. That was just not a well-calculated move. As far as the state of the Chargers, obviously it's been a rough year. And I'm hardly Phillip Rivers' biggest defender. But just like with Jason Garrett before, I don't see any benefit in making a change at this point for Phillip Rivers, especially considering how good he's been for the franchise for as long as he's been there with the franchise. I did say before, though, that I agree with the parallels with Eli Manning. I think the difference right now between Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning, one, Phillip Rivers did just do it a year ago. He didn't have a good playoff game, but he had a solid year a year ago, obviously, and they had some success. But there is no Daniel Jones behind him. So there was no anything building towards this moment where they had the heir apparent in place. I do think that is something they need to be looking for now, because Tom Brady's not normal. The reason we talk about Tom Brady the way we do is what he's doing is not normal. At playing at this level, at his age. So yeah, I do think the Chargers need to be looking at their quarterback position going forward for sure. All right, covered a lot of ground on the show so far, but time to get to the topics I have not as of yet in another one. All right, guys. What's up first, Anthony?
All right, let's start off with something that you've teased. Jim Harbaugh 0-4 against the Buckeyes. So how important is this weekend's game to his future, and has Harbaugh been a failure at Michigan?
A failure is, I guess, probably appropriate. I would skew more towards the word disappointment. It's not like they've gone out there and had a bunch of losing seasons or it's been miserable. So failure is a little tough to swallow, but failure in the sense of failing to meet expectations, sure, I think that would apply for Harbaugh, because the Michigan has won games that we expect them to win, but every time they've been faced with an opponent that would be their signature win, that they haven't risen to the challenge. I mean, last year, losing against Notre Dame to start the season, and then obviously losing decisively to Ohio State at the end of that season. The year before that, obviously losing to Ohio State by double digits right after losing against Wisconsin in two pretty big games. They also lost to Penn State. So all the good teams they faced in their schedule, they lost to that year. The year before was probably the real chance, and that was the double OT loss to Ohio State. If that game had gone differently, maybe we're thinking about Michigan right now a little bit differently. But it's already been a season that probably won't result in everything fans would want from them, because they have two losses on their resume heading into the game. They do have a win over Iowa, and of course a win over Ohio State would probably make it, I would say you'd have to almost call it a successful season. It's tough to scoff at 10-2 if you're beating the number one team in the country. But another loss making it the third loss for them this season, making it the fifth loss for Harbaugh against the Buckeyes, making him 0-5 against the Buckeyes. It's hard to describe the job he's done there as anything better than a disappointment. That's probably the nicest word I could use.
So the College Football Playoff Committee, they upset many on Tuesday when they put Ohio State over LSU. Ohio State jumping LSU to number one in the College Football Playoff rankings with just a couple weeks left. Can you make a legit argument for LSU not being number one? Did the College Football Playoff Committee just do this to create some drama?
It does feel like they do that every year, because is it consequential who's number one? It doesn't really matter, right? As long as you're in, it doesn't matter. So what do you do? You mix it up a little bit to give somebody something to talk about. It does feel like that happens. I'm not saying they do that for sure, but what's the point of the rankings being given away every week? It's to generate content, to create some drama, to create interest around the sport. And I think they did a good job doing it, in the middle of the week, so they're not in the middle of the NFL news cycle or anything like that. But yeah, that feels like the move, because when you can't change the teams, what can you do? You can mess around with the order a little bit, and then you can ask people whether, LSU deserved to drop in the rankings or not. Otherwise, they're pretty drama-free at the moment, right? Once Alabama lost, they've become pretty drama-free. So that seems to me to be the most logical explanation. I don't want to even make that out to be a big deal either. I don't really have a problem with that. I'm sure they would tell you that's not the case and there are legitimate reasons that they jumped them. But when you win, as LSU did, over Alabama, and you get that signature win on the season, the defining win of the college football season, and then the next 2 weeks you win convincingly. It's not like they were in barn burners. They won by 21 points and 36 points. It's hard to see you actually on merit falling back. So it does feel like more a entertainment play.
Stephen F. Austin, they handed Duke its first non-conference home loss since 2000. Now, it won't have an impact on Duke come for the bracket, but should it? Is that a problem for college basketball, that this type of loss won't really have an impact? And is that the issue with the college basketball regular season? How can you make it then more relevant?
That's the thing a lot of regular seasons search for. Really, the gift and the curse for football is, the curse is that the season has to be short, right? Because you cannot ask these guys to play more games. I mean, up to a certain degree. I think they'll wind up being 17 games in the NFL soon. But you get the point. The structure of the sport, the nature of the sport demands that the season be shorter and that there be more time in between games. College football, it's going to be the same way. And obviously, there, as more time goes on, I think you're going to hear more and more questioning of college football without compensation, just like college sports in general. But basketball is a little bit different. Obviously, baseball is even more different. And it's not football, where you can play more games. And I think we're finding out at the NBA level that the number of games that that league is playing is not exactly conducive to the best quality product, or is the best for the human body at the speed that those guys are playing it at. But the more games you play, by definition, the less each leverage is going to have. So football, part of the reason the NFL season is as successful as it is the scarcity of it. It's once a week. You can gamble on it. You can play your fantasy. You can do your traditions. And the games matter. Each game feels like it has consequence. In college basketball, it doesn't feel that way. But I'm not sure what the ultimate punishment can be, because if you only way you could make that actually have impact is if you shortened the season to a degree, and therefore the overall record was worse. I don't know how it affects Duke in the long term, or how you make it affect Duke in the long term without some sort of unfair penalty, because they're generally good. I really think what we've seen in college basketball this year is the lack of the dominance that has been there in recent past, because Duke doesn't have a Zion this year. They're not losing to Stephen F. Austin with Zion Williamson on their team, but they're capable of being got. Kentucky was already got. Michigan State was number one to start the season and lost. I think no other time had more than one number one lost in November. So it could actually lead to a more dramatic NCAA tournament, which is a sport that the structure already sets it up for drama, if not a more star power filled one.
NBA, the Spurs are in the midst of a losing season, and there is speculation that DeMar DeRozan may not be with the team much longer. Which team would benefit, you think, the most by adding DeRozan? Some teams that have been linked to the four-time All-Star, Rockets, Kings, Pistons, and even his old club, the Raptors, have been mentioned as well.
Oh, I would dig a Raptors reunion. That'd be cool. I mean, the Raptors are really good right now and proven they weren't a one-man team. I said before the season that I thought they'd still be top four in the East, and a lot of people sort of laughed at me. And, you know, they've got the core of a championship team. I mean, they did lose Danny Green in addition to Kawhi Leonard, but Siakam's taken a step forward. Fred VanVleet has proven what he did wasn't a fluke. I for sentimental purposes, I really like the idea of DeMar DeRozan there. Indiana is a team that could use some scoring on the wing. Philadelphia could really use some shooting. They could also use some shot creation. He's not exactly the problem with DeRozan. He's not a 3-point shooter, which they could use more than anything else. But I don't hate the idea of the Sixers, given that they lost their crunch time scorer in Jimmy Butler. Those are a few teams that pop to mind for me.
All right, and finally, Martin Scorsese's The Irishman hit Netflix on Wednesday. And I know you're not a big fan, right, of the gangster films in particular?
No, I don't really. And this is not a Martin Scorsese said this about Marvel movies, so I'm getting my revenge thing. I just never have found mob movies that interesting. I don't get the obsession with them. And clearly I'm in the minority, because if you're giving lists of the all-time great films, a lot of people are going to start them or at least include The Godfather and Godfather 2 and Goodfellas and movies like that. I just have never found that genre that interesting.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you do have a favorite Martin Scorsese film then?
Sure, I'm sure I do. Hold on, let me look at the movies he's made. I don't even know. I can't even tell you them all off the top of my head. Did he make Shutter Island?
Yes, he did.
I liked Shutter Island. I enjoyed Shutter Island. And that's, you know, funny enough, it's not a mob movie, right? Like, and that was just one that came to mind. I'm looking at the rest of his I was going to say discography, his IMDb page. That's the one that pops into my head. But if I'm looking at the rest of them really quick, I want to make sure that's the right answer for me. Because that's not like my favorite movie of all time or anything. But I did enjoy that movie. And most of those other movies, they just don't do anything for me. And that's not a knock. People like what they like. That's not a judgment. Clearly, those movies resonate with people in a way that they just don't with me. But none of those mob movies really do much for me. So that's my best answer of right now. I didn't really like The Wolf of Wall Street very much either, which was the more recent one. So I would go with I did enjoy Shutter Island, and I might like one of these ones a little bit more if I really thought about it. But I'm gonna go with that because it fits the tone of what I was saying. I guess I just don't have any fascination with that lifestyle. I don't, you know, feel some greater emotional connection to those storylines or whatnot. And even like the classics, even the Godfathers, it's not like it's bad. I just didn't. I'm not that intrigued by it. It doesn't enthrall me. Who said what really loudly? Was that you, Shep?
That was one of Shep's drops.
Oh, it was just a drop. I thought you that's you saying it in a sense.
I'm integrating some drops, and you haven't had a problem with it, so no. I'm going to keep doing it little by little.
No, I didn't say I had a problem with it. I was just asking
that.
What
You'd
the.
Be cool with it.
I thought you were taking umbrage to what I said.
No, that was Westbrook taking umbrage with what you said.
Let me hear it again. Oh, I see. Yeah, I got you. I didn't hear that second part of it in my ear as I was talking, but am I alone? Are you guys big mob movie fans? You love?
Yeah, I am. I disagree with you on that. But by Shep playing that drop, I also thought it would make it seem as if then he had a problem with it.
Yeah.
Your take on it.
That would be the implication, right? That would be the implication.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that mob movies aren't cinema. Like, The Godfather is cinema. And Goodfellas and Casino I kind of like Casino a little bit more than the other ones, I think. Scarface is not good, but that's not him, right? Either way, that whole genre just doesn't do anything. I don't care about these people. I don't care that they want to knock this guy off because he betrayed the family. I just, so what? That doesn't matter to me. I'll be back same time, same place next week. It's been the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.